off the other side. He talked about the Sea of Fertility, Tarentius. Pardon me, Dr. Dietrich, I'm probably messing up the pronunciation. He mentioned the Pyrenees, Gothenburg, the rest of those, the Sea of Tranquility. That was on the first pass. Then when we came up on the TV pass, remember they came steaming up around the corner, and they had the TV ready to go just as soon as they rounded the corner, and the first one they called out was Brand.
Yeah, fine. That solves my problem.
Okay, then the TV pass terminated at about Gilbert and Kastner in that area, and then if you'll remember, Jim had a few more remarks to make while the TV set was off.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we started picking up those other latitudes.
Now I wanted to ask Glenn Lunny a question. I understood last night that they might make an attempt to duplicate this famous orbiter picture where you had the lunar mass in the foreground and the Earth out in the distance. This wasn't done on this pass. Will they try it tonight at 8:30, do you know?
I don't know, Bill, but I certainly hope so. I'd like to see one of those, too. But I really don't know.
Gentlemen, I'll say.
Dr. Dietrich, I'd like to get back to one point. And I know the question has been asked to you, but you didn't answer it fully. What were the most interesting, the most revealing descriptions made by the cosmonauts so far of the lunar surface, as far as you're concerned?
Let's put it this way. It has not been a quiet morning for observing what they were doing or saying. We've had other things to do, too. In the descriptions that I caught while moving back and forth around the TV sets, I think probably his description of the interior of the large crater, I cannot find the name now, was it Tarentius, where he saw Langrenus, I believe it was.
Terracing.
The interior terracing. This we have seen on photographs, it's true, but photographs capture a view from an instantaneous position, whereas he was able to observe much more as the scene moved under him. You can tell much more about the third dimension by seeing a moving scene. And I thought that this was one of the things. The other thing that impressed me was that he confirmed the orbiter gray color for the moon. This, we hope, is something that will be rectified in other parts of the moon, but if it's gray, it's gray.
What do you mean, rectified?
Well, he'll find other colors. We have hopes that that we will have some spots, fresh areas perhaps, that will show different colors in addition to having a different albedo, a different shade of gray.
Mark Bloom.
I have two questions. Dr. Dietrich, if I may, was the television at all useful scientifically in any way?
Yes, I think it is quite useful. Now, if you're questioning this in the sense, do we get as good a resolution on the television pictures as we will on the film pictures, no. This is not right. The film pictures will always be better than the television as far as fidelity and the ability to recapture measurements, which, of course, is the name of the game. We need to measure things. I think that they have scientific value very definitely in that we are able to keep track of what is going on. We're able to monitor their progress in the areas where they have these television strips. We are able to ourselves get a little bit of an impression of this moving image that I was talking about him seeing.
Excuse me, I didn't mean from an operations standpoint. I meant from a science standpoint. I didn't mean from an
engineering. Well, for some time to come, that's the only way we will see the image moving under us to get an idea of how it changes with changing angles is by having someone else hold the camera.
And the other question I had was, I remember one of the three mentioned that they could see other craters, which they named, called Borman, Lovell, and Anders. I was just wondering whether they were kidding or whether they actually named themselves, had codes for themselves up there.
Very definitely. I beg your pardon? The craters Borman, Anders, and Lovell, I think, are appropriately located right together, three, in a little puppy foot. They're located, the center of them is located at about 15 south, 105 east. Borman is the biggest crater, Lovell is the next biggest, and Anders is the smallest.
What's your latest information on the high and low points of the orbits following LOI-1 and LOI-2?
Ed?
Ed, hello.
Would you ask again, please?
What's your latest information on the high and low points of the orbits following LOI-1 and LOI-2?
Okay, the elements were 60.6 nautical miles by 60.7 following LOI-2, and at the time that I left, we did not have a complete pass of radar tracking data, and this was a preliminary estimate.
Further question on the SPS, why did it burn longer than expected on both burns?
Well, we actually are not surprised if the burn runs a percent longer, which is apparently about the kind of number we ran on the first burn, and just a slight change in the chamber pressure can account for that. So that's not surprising, and it's due to that.
What about the second? 9 to 11 seconds is really more than a percent.
Yes, that number has to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt because that burn comes on and goes off so fast that I'm sure 10 seconds looks like 9 to them, so 10 looks like 11. So I wouldn't draw any conclusions from that. The significant thing is that the numbers, the velocity numbers left over in the guidance computer were very, very small, which indicated that we hit exactly the conditions that we had targeted for. The pressures in the engine, etc., are more indicative that the engine is working properly.
F. Clark.
Have you been able to tell from their descriptions and or from the TV how far north of their track and how far south of their track they can see? What's the band that they can observe?
I can feel that one, I believe. They have about 40 degrees, lunar degrees total, from horizon to horizon. If the spacecraft happens to be right over the equator, this, of course, would mean 20 north and 20 south. Due to the inclination of the orbit, at times they are able to see slightly more than 30 degrees south of the equator, and one half revolution later, they will see a little more than 30 degrees north of the equator, each time at the expense of the other view.
Then how much of the, how wide up, what's the farthest north that they will have seen and the farthest south by the time they've made all 10 reps? How much of the moon will they have surveyed, in effect? How big a band?
They will have had the opportunity, now we're speaking of a level moon, not mountain peaks. But on a level surface, they would have seen to about 32 and a half degrees, I believe. Wasn't it 12 and a half that the orbit inclination turned out to be 12.3? It'll be about 32 and a half degrees to the south, which will generally be on the eastern side of the moon. And then on the western side of the moon, they will be to about 32 and a half degrees north. Peaks will show up beyond that distance.
I have a couple of questions. Did I understand someone to say this morning that the mass cons have had no effect whatsoever on the orbit, or is this uncertain yet?
Oh, no. They've affected the orbit, and I just gave some remarks as to how that shows up in a qualitative way. What exactly they did to the orbit, I don't have those numbers with me.
You don't know the deviation. No. The crater naming, was that all done here before the flight, or have they named any craters as they passed over them?
No, I think the intent of the names that were selected were just to give some identification for training and for making up the many maps that the men have to carry.
That was all done here?
Yes. I assume it was here.
There were two named
There were two names in orbit. Which were the names given in orbit?
Oh, the one Aaron and another
Pardon
one Dennis.
Me?
Aaron and Dennis.
Would you repeat Aaron?
A-A-R-O-N and Dennis.
Would you explain those again, please?
It's just that we pointed those two craters out on the screen. I remember pointing both of them out and saying, what's the name of that one going by now? And Bill said, oh, I don't know. Call it John Aaron. That's essentially the way we've set up the whole designation system of our craters. There certainly can be no official number, name, or letter designated by us. But we had to use a number or some sort of designation for our craters. We were going to use it or unnamed.
What is the... Would someone explain just exactly what landmark tracking is and why it's done?
Landmark tracking is simply an operation with the telescope sextant equipment on board, similar to what was done in Apollo 7, only it is done over the selected areas that we intend to use as eventual landing sites when we go to the moon. Now, the intent of the exercise is to see how well the men can do that work and how accurately they can then determine where the site is relative to the orbit they're in. The problem, of course, when you go on a lunar landing mission is to be sure that when you start your descent, you're going down to the site you want to land at.
Okay, let's take Henry Simmons and go to this gentleman on the third row who's, I think, been waiting for a while.
On the LOI-2 burn, I was interested that the engine had burned about 10 or 20% longer than the planned value and yet had produced the requisite delta V change. Does that mean the engine is getting weaker?
No, as I said earlier, I think that just has to do with how accurately the time of the burn itself was noted. The job that the pilots have when they're doing a burn and monitoring one is fairly extensive, and it's pretty intensive also, as you could expect. And I think when the burn is over, they glance up at the clock and note what time it was. But to the nearest second or so, I wouldn't try to draw any conclusions from that reading.
This gentleman on the third row here.
During the TV pass, if we can assume at any one point that the camera was pointed almost directly down, how large was the area we were seeing?
Want to try?
I don't know.
I don't know the lens characteristics well enough to give an answer to your specific question. At the time they were looking at Smythe C, however, they were seeing, and of course this was not straight down. This was probably a few degrees to several degrees off vertical. They were looking at an area that's about 15 lunar degrees in width. And...
Is that 16 miles a degree?
16 miles per degree, I believe it is.
Nautical miles, statute miles.
Close enough. I think it's 30 kilometers.
30 kilometers a degree. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
With reference to the previous question about landmark tracking, it sounded rather, as they were coming in, it sounded rather like they had done their homework pretty well, because I recall they were calling off their primary sites and secondary sites, and they were just naming off existing and known landmarks with a great deal of aplomb. I wonder if somebody could comment on this. It seems to me that the landmark tracking is almost superfluous here. I know it is.
No. First off, I think it's great that they can call them off like that, as they have to do the star fields and their navigation on the way to the moon. But the problem with the landmark tracking is mostly a matter of degree and accuracy, and that's what you're trying to get with the tracking itself as opposed to identification.
Let's take a question from the gentleman at the third row, and then I understand we have a couple of questions at the Cape. We'll switch there and then come back and wrap it up with a few more questions here.
Dr. Dietrich, you mentioned that you were pleased at their ability to observe detail at high sun angles. I wonder if this could do anything to... and future missions to give you a wider launch window by perhaps lessening the lunar lighting constraint.
Yeah, okay.
office?
That's a decision that someone else will have to make. The real nice thing about low sun angle is the fact that you can have a better judge of your height of objects that you're looking at. We had somewhat believed before this morning, before I saw the TV this morning, that there would be a large area that was essentially washed out, where you could see very little detail. And that was the thing I was talking about. We still have a degraded vision, or a degraded ability to observe details at the high sun angles, but it's not as bad as we had thought.
Okay, let's switch to the Cape for a couple of questions.
Thanks, John. We've got two questions here. Pete Wright, Chicago's American gentleman. Gentlemen, can we have any idea of the emotional response of the astronauts to this fantastic adventure, becoming the first men to see the moon from close up?
Go ahead. The question was, do we have a feeling for the emotional response they had? I would certainly say it was one of jubilation, exaltation, and any other word I can think of that would be synonymous with those. This is something they've worked many, many weeks and months on. One of the questions over here was how much homework had we done on landmark tracking and on our lunar landmarks. And let me assure you, there was a great deal of time put in on this, and I think part of the exaltation was just being able to see something and recognize it. And the more craters they saw and recognized, the more jubilant they became.
Hans Hofer, German press agency. Do you expect the astronauts to see soft landers on the moon's surface? And if you do, which rev would offer the best opportunities for this?
I think the question was whether we would be able to see the spacecraft on the moon's surface from the Earth. Is that right? And I'm not really prepared to answer that. As far as from the Earth in general goes, the lighting is essentially the same each rev when it comes around. I guess the only hope for seeing it would be that while the spacecraft would still be in sunlight, the moon below would be dark, and you would see a reflection of the spacecraft, some sun off the spacecraft, against the dark background of the moon when it was in shade. I have heard that some people are trying to actually catch that with the telescope, but I can't comment on it any more than that.
Thanks very much, but sorry, this was not what I had in mind. Do you expect the crew of Apollo 8, to see soft landers on the surface of the moon? I mean, the Voyagers, Rangers, and so on. And if you do, in which revolution would you expect them to do it?
I don't know.
There is one surveyor craft that is just a few degrees on the dark side of the Terminator. This was our closest chance, and had the launch slipped a few days, we might have had an opportunity. As it is now, the spacecraft are on the dark side of the Terminator, and the answer is no, there's no chance.
The visibility of objects on the dark side of the Terminator. Have they said anything about the visibility? How dark it actually is?
They haven't said anything that I know of, Jerry, but I imagine it's pretty dark.
The only comment that I have heard along that line was while they were still over the sunlit surface, looking beyond the Terminator, I believe it was on the first revolution, there was a comment that we could not see in objects in Earthshine. But when they're flying above the glaring surface, I wouldn't expect them to have their night adaptation yet. So hopefully, but I haven't heard any words.
Harry Pease.
A couple more questions on nomenclature. We've had John Aaron identified for us, but would you tell us who Mr. Dennis is and why he was sighted in flight?
John Aaron is... one of the men who works over in the control center in the Moker. He's worked a lot of Gemini flights, and he's worked almost all the Apollo flights, and is real popular with all the pilots for his work.
Dennis
is a young gentleman who works over in our neck of the woods in Flight Crew Systems Division. He was one of the real mainstays in the formulation of the checklist. And so the crew had naturally had quite a bit of contact with him, and when they needed a name quick to name one, the first one they thought of was Dennis.
Well, the first name?
That's his first name, Dennis Bentley.
His last name is?
Bentley.
B-E-N-T-L-E-Y?
Right.
What's the latitude longitude of Bentley?
This is... what I did want to ask was, after the Russians got their first backside pictures, they named a bunch of blobs over there for people on their side of the world. And I think the IAU did ultimately accept those as official names. Now, do you have any intention to propose these to the International Astronomical Union as official names?
You know, Jim?
I have no idea. I don't think there was any intent in the designation of these craters to formally propose these as names, because we just didn't feel it was a chance anyway. We only gave them these names because we wanted to, in some small way, give recognition to those who were really close to our Apollo 8 mission.
Dr. Dietrich, when were the names Borman, Lovell, Anders, Bassett, and C proposed, or when did they come up? Several months ago or just recently?
As far as my experience is concerned, I first saw them on a map about 3 days ago.
I saw them this morning when they handed me the map at the Capcom console.
Yeah, well, did you do it, sir?
No, sir.
Who did?
Flight Crew Support Group.
The crew did it.
The crew
did it.
The problem is, when you're trying to describe something, you need a handle.
Yeah.
And the backside of the moon is almost without handles to hold on to. So they had to have something.
But these were on the front. These were on the front side, were they?
No, sir. They're all, I believe every one of the named craters is beyond 90 degrees east.
That's right.
Or if not, it's very near 90 where we're looking at it flat on, when we're looking at it with an Earth telescope, so that you can see very little about the surface.
Collins and Houston are about 92 and 95, respectively.
Ev Clark.
Question for Dr. Dietrich. There was a reference, I think, by Lovell to craters with dark spots in the centers and with light, what looked like light dust around the rims. Could you draw any conclusions from that, or did it sound like what you've seen before in photographs? Did it add anything or raise your interest at all?
It raised my interest, particularly because there is a very small amount of normal dark-colored Mare material on the part of the moon that we have recently found out about from orbiter photographs, the backside, the far side of it. He may have been referring, and I do not know for sure, he may have been referring to craters with dark floors of material something like this Mare deposit, but with a lighter colored rim. This would be in line with, well, for instance, Copernicus on the front side is a very large crater with similar characteristics. I don't know the craters he was talking about.
Art Schneider.
On the matter of nomenclature again, isn't it the tradition of the IAU to name these objects after people who are deceased, and would this be a violation of that tradition?
I don't know the total rule list. I know that about a year and a half ago there was some discussion, and at that time one of the conditions was that if it was a person, the person would be deceased, but I do not know whether this is one of the rules.
Mark Bloom.
John, I just want to ask John, so we can all write our sidebars, is it possible we can get that map that Mr. Carr was referring to with the names on it, so we'll know where all these things are?
Well, let's see, at this point in time, I think we've only got a single copy, the one that Jerry's got, but why don't we look into the possibilities of reproduction? It's certainly available for perusal, I know.
Because Because it seems to be a point of interest, and it's going to get very confused, I think, if we don't get at least a good map like that.
We'll check into it right after the conference. Let's see. We've got time for about three or four more questions.
John, there are a number of numbers that we would like to get cleared up, and I think it's probably simpler if we could have you read some of them than if we all come up and try to do it individually, such as exact times on LOI 1 and 2, Delta V's on LOI 1 and 2, and so on. Do we have a...
Yes,
are those available?
I believe that's one of our prime purposes for Mr. Pavelka's role with us today. Why don't we close it on that note, if you like?
Okay, I can begin by giving you the ignition time for the LOI 1 maneuver. It was 69 hours, 08 minutes, 19.5 seconds. The delta V of that maneuver was 2,996.8 feet per second. Let me give you those parameters on the LOI 2 maneuver, and I'd be happy if you would point me in the direction of other parameters that you're interested in. For LOI 2, the ignition time was 73 hours, 35 minutes, 05.7 seconds. The delta V for that maneuver was 135.2 feet per second. Those are generally the main points of interest. If you'll give me some questions, I'll fill you in.
First LOS and the first AOS, if you can get that.
The first LOS was 68 hours, 58 minutes, 05 seconds. The first acquisition was 69 hours, 31 minutes, 45 seconds. The first acquisition, 69 hours, 31 minutes, 45 seconds.
Just one other one. Do you have a period for the new orbit so that we can estimate about what their orbital time is each time?
Hours. If that helps any. Do you have an exact number?
Of the burns, too.
I think you hit the magic number that I don't have in my pocket here. 2 hours is the number we use as a rule of thumb, and it's very close. It's within several minutes.
I think I'd like burn.
Do you have the duration of the two burns?
Okay. The burn time for the LOI 1 burn was 4 minutes, 02.36 seconds. The burn time for LOI 2 was 9.34 seconds.
One more for history, if I may. It got a little confused at this point. Does anyone have the exact first words from lunar orbit and who said them?
Why don't you take that, Jerry?
As I remember, the first words on acquisition came from Jim Lovell. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact words, but I know that it involved what we call the burn status report. The first item on the burn status report is whether the ignition went off on time. And as I remember, the very next thing he said was what the paracynthian and apocynthian were. And I believe, did you write those down, Glenn? He called them out as...
Yeah, he called out about 61 and 169.
Yeah, they were so close that everybody just gasped. They were so close to being right smack on the button.
Okay, on that historic note, let's close it.